Emmanuel Church. This is Zach DePrima. I'm here with Alex, and we are here today to discuss a subject that I think is really relevant at this time. Both of us think this, and that is the topic of reading and the Christian life. This is probably a prime opportunity, as some of us have extra time on our hands, to be doing more reading, getting into the practice and discipline of reading. So we thought it'd be fruitful to discuss the topic a little bit. Alex, in his classic work, Spiritual Disciplines of the Christian Life, Donald Whitney, he presents learning, the discipline of learning, as a spiritual discipline. And within that discipline of learning, he includes, obviously, the reading of Christian books and Christian literature. Do you agree with Don Whitney in that book that learning or Christian reading should be considered a Christian discipline? And if so, why?
Yeah, so if I recall in Whitney's book, learning is the big category, and under learning, you know, one way in which we learn, one method of learning is through reading. And yeah, in general, I would agree with him. We're to love the Lord our God with all our heart, soul, mind, and strength. Our minds are a stewardship from God, cultivating our minds, training our minds. We're called to abound in knowledge. We're called to grow in wisdom, and one of the ways we do that principally is by learning from God's word, learning from, nature, learning from education, learning from books. And so I think reading, the medium of reading, taking in information through written sources, is a wonderful way to learn and to grow and to accomplish some of these biblical ideals: loving God with mind, growing and abounding in knowledge, seeking to grow in wisdom and understanding. So that would be kind of the broad answer I'd give.
So in a world where time is finite, we have limited resources, we have a limited amount of hours and minutes in our life, why is it important for the Christian to prioritize reading?
Yeah, well, I guess...
I'm saying in light of all the things I can be doing.
Sure.
I can be praying, I can be finding ways of loving my neighbor, I can be going on a walk with my kids. Why
sure.
prioritize Christian reading in the life of a believer?
Well, let me say that I would not want to say that everybody must be reading every day or a certain amount. Everybody's lives are different. We have different priorities that are weighing on us at different times. And so I don't assume everybody's priorities are going to be the same all the time, nor can I say from a chapter and verse, you must be reading Christian books regularly. So far be it from me to be the Lord of anyone's conscience. But I would suggest that one ingredient to a well-balanced Christian life, let's say, is the regular to semi-regular intake of good Christian books. And so I would commend that to every Christian. Certainly if you come to Emmanuel, we're giving away books all the time. We're recommending books all the time. Again, I can't give you a chapter and verse that says you must be reading these books, but I would commend the practice to anyone. And one of the reasons I think reading should be a regular part of the Christian life is because we're so much in need of spiritual input and good spiritual benefit from sources other than our own quiet time, or even I'd say from our own, Sunday gatherings, like Equip classes and sermons and all of that. So it encourages me to know that, like, the members of our church, for example, are reading from other good Christian sources.
Mm-hmm.
Certainly there's a burden on the pastors of the church to bring teaching to the people, but to know that they're able to access good teaching from other sources as well, either from listening to other sermons online or reading other good Christian books, is definitely an encouragement to me. And I know, for myself, I'm not the perfect pastor, far from it. And so to know that members are able to access thoughts and books and resources from other pastors and other theologians and Christian thinkers is a great comfort to me and encouragement to me, and something that I think can be wonderfully supplemental to the teaching ministry of the church.
Yeah, I find it's helpful to think of the discipline of reading Christian literature as just another one of the tools in the life of a believer in their walk with Christ.
Sure.
I think of Romans 8 that talks about the life that's oriented by the Spirit and the life that's oriented by the flesh. And Paul says, "For those who live according to the flesh set their minds on the things of the flesh, But those who live according to the Spirit set their minds on the things of the Spirit. I think if I'm a Christian, and it's so vitally important that I set my mind on the things of the Spirit, I'm going to be looking for all sorts of influences in my life. Yes. That the things that occupy my mind, for those things to be spiritual things.
Yes.
Well, and that applies to all sorts of aspects of our life. That applies to what we watch on television or entertainment, what we talk to our kids about. Well, when I think of recreational activities, mm-hmm. why not, like, my reading, the books that I read, be on spiritual matters?
Yeah, and on that same point, I mean, we're taking in media all the time. Yeah. On our phones, on our computers, out and about, day to day, in our schools, and our jobs, and more and more, I think, look, a 50-minute sermon every Sunday is just not sufficient scriptural, spiritual, Christian intake. And so if we can sort of balance, you know, all the messaging we're getting from the world and fortify ourselves with messaging from good Christian sources, I think that's wonderful. One of the benefits I'll just mention is I think reading is one way that helps us as well to realize greater connectedness and unity with the body of Christ, mm-hmm. not only globally in our day, but also throughout time. Mm. So how happy would we be, what a privilege it would be to beam Charles Spurgeon into this podcast right now, right? Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Well, it's not like I don't have any access to Spurgeon and his mind and his thoughts. Right. I have his books. He's put his thoughts down, and I can access this great and godly gift that the Lord has given to his church. I can dive deeply into the thinking of Martin Luther or John Calvin or John Newton. I remember Rex Blackburn, one of our members, talking about how he sort of adopted at one point in his life John Newton as sort of a personal pastor mm-hmm. from centuries gone by. Newton even today is able to pastor his mm-hmm. soul and minister to him. And I think we all have people like that in our own lives who minister to us.
One more question on this why read. It's just the case in many of our churches. We'll just have some brothers and sisters that they just find reading challenging. Mm-hmm. They don't find it to be particularly edifying.
Yeah.
What are some things you would say to that brother or sister, just either to challenge them or encourage them?
Yeah.
What they can find if they pick up a book?
I'll just sympathize with folks in that situation for a minute. Just as a fellow traveler, I don't always find reading stimulating or exciting or something mm-hmm. like that. As one who does, as a matter of their job, mm-hmm. An ongoing education, you know, I do read a lot. But it's not like, oh my goodness, this is the most exhilarating thing I could be doing right now.
Mm-hmm.
In some ways, it's like eating your vegetables and working out.
Hmm.
The fact is, forget Christian books for a minute. Just reading books, there's no educator or psychologist or anyone in the world who would not tell you reading books isn't good for you
mm-hmm.
in terms of cultivating your mind, stimulating your mind. Even your own mental health, it's good for you. It keeps your mind alive and awake and alert. And so I would view it. I like that Donald Whitney in his book puts it in the category of spiritual discipline. Like mm-hmm. we have to say, this is good for me to regularly, whether it's 10 minutes a day or an hour a week or whatever, I'm just going to give myself to read. It's just healthy for us. So I think if you feel I don't love reading, don't be dismayed. Don't be discouraged.
You're a good company.
Yeah. I mean, we're all in this together, you know.
Yeah.
But also I would just say, the benefits of sustained reading over years, you know, it's like a snowball going down a hill. So you kind of just need to start and get into it, mm. and just start reading.
Mm-hmm.
But you'll find over the years, if you'll give yourself to reading, the accumulation of knowledge and wisdom and hopefully discernment that will come is just tremendous and greatly enriches a person's life and mind and hopefully
mm-hmm.
their maturity and holiness and godliness as well. I mean, that's the goal. You can't make that happen. It's not like he who reads the most books will be the most holy.
Right.
But if you're really comprehending what you're reading and internalizing what you're reading, if it's good Christian literature, it will often have that effect.
Yeah. So shifting from why we should read or why we should consider reading, I want us to think about what to read.
Okay.
It's just the case that in a world where millions of books, there's simply just not time to read everything worth reading. I find the more time I spend with pastors, the more I'm frustrated. Like, there's just not enough hours in a life to read all the books that people are suggesting to me or telling me that I should read. I think we're probably, you and I are the biggest offenders in this area because we're very obnoxious and constantly suggesting books for people to read. I've heard it wisely said that the greatest enemy to great books is good books. You know, we want to spend our time reading great books, those books that are really going to help me in my walk with Christ. How do you decide what to read in your devotional reading and when it comes to Christian books? And what would you suggest believers think when it comes to that?
Yeah, well, latent in the question you just asked is I think, a very important principle. I mean, be selective in what you read. Just think, look, I'm not going to read everything. I can't read everything. I'm going to be selective. And then, I would encourage folks, it's just not true that every book that's touted as really great is actually really great. And not all books hit people in the same way. So get a sense of where you're at and what you need and what kind of reader you are. I think finding someone who's kind of like you, you know, and it's like this, like my wife knows me pretty well at this point, and she will, she'll watch something, and she'll offer me the filter for me, you know. So she'll say, "Oh, you know, you'll never like that. Don't even bother watching it." Mm-hmm. Or she'll say, "You know, oh no, you'll love this. Watch." And she's right with 95% accuracy.
Yeah.
And so find a friend like that. Could be your spouse, or it could just be a friend that, look, I just trust this person. They normally push good resources on me. And so I wouldn't assume, like for example, I recommend books a lot in the church. If I'm not batting a good average, if you do take me up on it, read some things that I've recommended, like these aren't really helping me, you could shut me off. That's fine. Yeah. But if you find a friend or a resource online, I know like you have websites like Challies.com, Tim Challies always recommending books. Mark Dever and Nine Marks Ministries always recommending books. Just kind of find your speed. I mean, who are the people I can trust? What are the lists I normally get good resources from? And then kind of shut everybody off. People are recommending things on Facebook and Twitter and other places all the time. Look, you can't read everything. You're not everybody else. I mean, find your speed and find your resources and the people you trust and just kind of go with that.
Alex, you devote a lot of your time to historical matters, studying a lot of dead guys. Do you suggest that Christian people spend their time reading modern authors or authors from previous generations?
Definitely both and. I would definitely read modern authors because a lot of times they're writing in a way that is, if they're good authors, they've studied modes of communication now and the style of writing that's accessible. I do think that's a gift in a lot of modern writing. As much as I love the Puritans, they wasted a lot of words sometimes. Mm-hmm. Sometimes they don't at all, you know. But other times they're just so verbose. Mm-hmm. You wish they could be more compendious, more concise. Mm-hmm. And so,
but that's less words like compendious.
I'm sorry, say that again?
Use less words like compendious.
Yeah, sure. Compendious. Lot of information.
We wish the Puritans used less words like that.
I might have learned that one from the Puritans. I think about it. No, but I would say this. I find myself often in the place of commending dead authors to people. People don't find it hard to go to the New York Times bestsellers list or the top Christianity books and kind of pull from those. I find myself trying to encourage folks to read dead guys. And if I could just get on my hobby horse for a minute, you know, with that, there's a variety of reasons for that. I do think, generally speaking, people thought more deeply in generations gone by. Mm-hmm. People gave more time to reflection, solitude. Ages in the past were not as distracted or frankly, even as busy as our ages are. Mm-hmm. Education, I think, was much broader. It was common to receive a classical education in a number of the more prominent universities in the past. Certainly for a lot of British authors, but a lot of other Western authors as well. But then I would also say one reason it's important to read older, you know, dead authors is because they never change. Mm. You know, the record, the canon is closed, you know. Charles Spurgeon's life is over. Mm. John Calvin's life is over. The record is in place. Their words are in place. And Spurgeon's never, you know, been out of print. Calvin's never been out of print. There's a reason why these guys are perennially relevant. And there's not going to be some new discovery about them that makes me, you know, sorry I ever had their books on my shelf or something like that. Mm-hmm. They're there and they never change. Mm-hmm. Another reason, though, to read dead authors, and I think this is one of the most important, if you want to, again, steward and cultivate your mind and grow as a Christian person, one of the things reading authors from centuries gone by, one of the things that's so helpful about it is it shows you two things. If you're reading a lot of dead authors from various centuries, you are appreciating, number one, the things, the aspects of life, various thoughts, things that are perennially relevant all throughout history. So if I read in John Owen that he's trying to help his church members learn how to love prayer more, his members struggled to pray. Well, okay, that's not unique about my generation.
Right.
And so this maybe is a problem that other people have had, you know. His work on mortifying sin is a great example. Like the same stuff that they went through, and you learn kind of human nature that way. Mm-hmm. Secondly, and this I find oftentimes more helpful, I can appreciate those things that are, let's say, idiosyncratic about my own generation. Mm. I have other centuries and other generations to kind of compare my generation to. And I could look back on what how other writers and generations wrestle through different things. And that helps me to see blind spots in my own generation. That helps me to see weaknesses and strengths in my own generation. I can just be more conscious of the human experience and of life over time and how different generations have wrestled through different things. And it helps me, hopefully, to be more faithful in my own generation, to speak prophetically to my generation, to be a help and an encourager and a challenger and to my own generation, if I'm aware of what generations gone before have thought. Yeah.
And just to think of the wisdom of previous generations.
Yeah.
I mean, you have, to speak to our moment right now, we're in the midst of a very uncertain time with a lot of suffering to come ahead. And to think of older authors, men of different generations, think of a guy like John Owen, no stranger to suffering, no stranger to uncertainty, no stranger to political tumultuous, you know, events. I mean, a guy who buried over 10 of his own children. To hear somebody like that speak about sorrow, or somebody like that speak about spiritual depression, or what it's like to, you know, trust the Lord, is deeply instructive to people in our generation who are so foreign to something like what we're going through today.
Yeah, I think a great example, you know, we as elders have been talking, trying to grapple with the whole COVID-19 thing. And I have noticed in Lai Chow, one of our pastors, just a really sweet composure and poise, sort of confidence through everything. He doesn't seem at all fazed by this. And very quickly, as soon as we started talking about this, his medical mind was working to think about various medical reference points.
Right.
You know, other diseases, things like that. And he has that ability as a doctor. He's got reference points and he's certain things he's seen before, and he knows what's unique about this disease and what's this is just like everything. And he's able to sort of make this calculus because he has this knowledge and this experience and this study under his belt. Well, similarly, with other crises or things you might encounter in your life, if you have in the mental catalog, you know, books and people you've studied from the past, they inform your situation. Yeah. We're not the first ones to go through X, Y, or Z. We're not the first person to have this struggle in our church. We're not the first people to have a government that is acting in this way. You know, those kind of things that immediately comes to your mind when you're trying to grapple with various life experiences.
So moving from the what to a bit of the how, I want us to think about, you know, how do I read a book well? What are your suggestions, whether it's a book like Knowing God or Pilgrim's Progress by Bunyan, a Puritan? How does a Christian person, how can they read a book well and glean insights effectively?
Yeah, I'm tempted to say, kind of like the Nike mantra, just do it.
Yeah.
I mean, just read. Just open a book and start reading. There's no trick. It's kind of like people often want help to know how to pray. Well, yeah, there's helps you can give them. But at the end of the day, you do have to get down on your knees and just do it, right? Similarly with reading, I would go for low-risk, high-return type books. If I'm not a reader or I don't read much and I want to read more, well, ask a pastor, ask a friend, what's something I'm just going to enjoy? Find something short, something very immediately edifying. Don't pick up, you know, Calvin's Institutes or Owen's treatise on the Trinity or communion with God. Find something, All of Grace by Charles Spurgeon or something by a popular level author that's been written. And I would start there, and I would build your mental muscles, your literary muscles in terms of what you can take. And so start with something fun, start with something you're interested in, but don't make really ambitious goals. I'm going to read, 25 books this year. Mm-hmm. Maybe some of us just have to, look, I just want to read a book this year. Mm-hmm. That's my big goal. Mm-hmm. That's fine, but get started. And if it's helpful, read with others. I think that's a great way to learn, how to read well. If you don't read often, get in a book club or get with another saint in the church. Say, hey, let's go through a book together. I'm not much of a reader, but I want to be one. Mm-hmm. I want to grow in that. And
can you share maybe something from personal experience of reading a book with another Christian person?
Oh, yeah. Well, just a few months ago, I was reading Pilgrim's Progress with about 7 or 8 guys in the church. Mm. We met every other Wednesday night before I would normally have elders meeting and just worked through it a couple chapters at a time. I don't know if we actually ever finished it I think Christmas interrupted and we didn't get to do the last session together. But I think we met 5 or 6 times to go through the book and it was very edifying. My wife Jenna did that with 2 or 3 other women in the church. It was very helpful, very stimulating. I saw all kinds of things in the book I've never seen before because I was reading it in community. And, we just read a couple of chapters, then come together, ask questions. We all highlighted underlying things. It was a lot of fun and been very, very edifying.
One of the last weeks we met as a church, you spent the Equip class teaching on discipling in the life of the church.
Yeah.
Do you find reading a book as to be an effective one-on-one discipling tool?
Yeah, definitely. But not for everybody.
Okay.
So I do not want anyone to think that there's a one-size-fits-all method of discipling. Mm. Discipling is helping other Christians follow Jesus and doing so hopefully in a way that's deliberate and regular and intentional. And so that can happen. I was with a brother yesterday. We're just going on a walk. Well, actually, we had read a book, and then we walked and talked about it, so that's not a good example. Mm-hmm. But there's definitely men in the church I get together with, and it's just for fellowship, community, ask each other questions, how you doing? That said, I do think reading books is a very effective way of discipling because it gives you some content to discuss.
Right.
Gives you something to talk about, to work through together. It's accountability, built-in accountability. You just asked me the other day if we could read that book by John Stott. Mm-hmm. That's going to help me go ahead and actually read the book because I know you're going to be asking me about it. And we'll be able to work through it together. So, I think it's great to use a book if it's helpful to you. Don't feel limited by that, though. Well, you have to do that.
No, yeah, I wouldn't feel limited by it. But I think for some of us who are just getting our toes wet with discipling as a normal fixture of the Christian life, a book can be a really useful crutch.
Yeah,
you don't know this brother or sister in Christ too well. Well, maybe a great way of starting to have spiritually edifying conversation and challenging of one another, read through a book together.
Yeah, right.
I mean, it's one reason why I find those discipling books that we gave out so helpful is they're just eminently readable.
Yes.
And they're so readable that you could just get together with another Christian and just read a few pages together.
Yes.
Like literally word for word. You don't need to talk about, read it beforehand, then get together. You can read it together.
Yes.
And it'd be extremely fruitful. I've done that with a couple of men in the church and I've just found it to be super instructive.
Well, and there's lots of books that have literally discussion questions in them at the end of the chapter.
Right.
Questions for reflection or whatever. So literally, you could be spoon-fed some of the icebreakers, the conversation starters.
Yeah.
So I think it's great. I'd encourage people to do it.
So, we've geared a lot of this conversation towards people who maybe are less inclined to read. And maybe I'd like us to focus a little bit of attention on maybe those who could be focused too much on reading, if that's even a category. We have a lot of armchair theologians in our church, men who are men with seminary degrees,
yes.
And women as well. Can a Christian prioritize Christian reading too much? Can Christians read so much that they're no earthly good?
Oh, yeah, that's definitely true. Yeah, I think we've all known, that man or that woman who just has their nose stuck in a book and ultimately doesn't, they talk about book smarts and street smarts. That's a handy way of talking about a very real thing. I mean, we have to study the world and people and things and then also, study books as well. I think I would just remember that principle that is borne out in Scripture, that knowledge does not equal, I mean like information transfer type knowledge. I'm talking about knowledge of the Lord.
Mm-hmm.
But knowledge does not equal piety or godliness or nearness with Christ.
Mm-hmm.
And so the fact that a man or a woman has a PhD has never been less impressive to me.
Mm.
The fact that they can tell me, well, I've read all of, Newton's works or Sibbes' works or something like that. Okay, that may be great for you if, mm-hmm. if you read it well and internalized it well and did so with prayer and with real spiritual attentiveness. But it doesn't create any godliness in people necessarily. So I would encourage people to read because I think it can be a help, but it doesn't guarantee that you're going to grow in grace or be a godlier person. And so, some people too, they love to read and they could just be reading all the time. In the spirit of your question, I'm saying this, that some of us need to know how to put books down and go play football with the kids or go have a Nerf war with the kids or go on a walk with our spouses. So I would not commend bookishness because that can not only make you a less well-rounded individual, it could also hurt people in your life. And so this I would view this as a one healthy ingredient to a healthy Christian life. But I wouldn't read 10 hours a day, and no one wants to hang out with that guy or that girl.
Alex, can you speak to the book that we picked out to give to our members during this crisis?
Yes, I'll speak to it and then also make an apology. So we are purchasing copies of Big God by Orlando Sayer, S-A-E-R. And unfortunately, we got kind of one small shipment of books, which we'll send out. The rest are on back order right now. And so some of you will be getting books probably next week. And then others, it might be 2 or 3 weeks from now before you get that book. But yeah, the book is Big God by Orlando Sayer. And basically, it's a very simple, short treatment of the sovereignty of God, particularly that doctrine's relevance to the Christian life. So it's not just presenting that God is sovereign. Pastor Sayer talks about really puts the sovereignty of God, you know, boots on the ground. And so he analyzes four particular issues: the relevance of the sovereignty of God in decision making. How do I know the will of God? Mm-hmm. The relevance of the sovereignty of God to evangelism. The relevance of the sovereignty of God to the question of suffering. So if God's in control, why am I suffering? And I'm drawing a blank as to the fourth one now. Evangelism, suffering, decision-making. I'm not going to remember the fourth off the top of my head.
Can you share an insight from your reading of it that you found particularly helpful?
Oh, yeah. I think the chapter on decision-making is especially good. I think that's an area where a lot of people have mistaken notions as to how we're to make decisions. We're often waiting for some sort of subjective impulse from the Spirit or something like that. Like, it just felt right, so
right.
God must be leading. You know, his insights on how to make decisions in light of the sovereignty of God and the revealed will of God are very helpful. I'm not going to say more than that. I'll just encourage folks to read that chapter. I will say one thing I find really helpful about the book is Pastor Sayer's knowledge of human nature, people, where they're at, and also our culture. So he deals with the big motif in the book is how we often shrink God, and his effort is to help us unshrink God, hence Big God. And he acknowledges all these subtle ways in which we shrink God. One just fun example. We often use that language, oh, that was such a God thing. And nothing inherently wrong with that. But Orlando makes the point that we only seem to ever say that when there's some like great coincidence that yields positive benefits for us. That's when we say it's a God thing.
Yes,
it's all a God thing.
Right,
God's over everything.
Right.
So your flu was a God thing. You know, your frustration at work was a God thing. God's orchestrating everything, not just those semi-pleasant coincidences that come into our lives. You know? So anyway, he just got a lot of illustrations like that. And really, that's why I say he just helps us think more carefully through the sovereignty of God and how it, you know, affects our lives as Christians.
Well, Alex, any final thoughts on the topic of reading in the Christian life?
Simply to say, I think it's something every Christian should try to give themselves to. Again, I can't say you have to read. I'm not the Lord of your conscience, but I would encourage every Christian to take up Christian books, to make a habit of it, a discipline of it, and seek to grow in it for the good of your soul and the good of your health as a believer.
Well, Alex, thank you for your time. Brothers and sisters, we love you, and we hope you found this helpful.